Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Marie.
What are you up to later? Want to join me for happy hour?
I'm all in.
And guess what's amazing? Our listeners and friends of the podcast can also join us because Brave New Teaching Happy Hour has officially launched. Cheers!
Cheers, everyone! We are officially hanging out a little bit longer after school with an extended, extra, private podcast feed just for you.
Yes. Members of Happy Hour get extra 15 minutes of the podcast, give or take, because you know us, we run a little bit long. It's just kind of how we are. But if you would like to get in on this Happy Hour action, please join us. It is only $5 a month. Head to curriculumrehab.com/happy hour and get yourself signed up, because when you're there, Amanda, tell our friends what we do every month for our Happy Hour members.
I think my favorite part is coming up with a new free resource for our listeners every month. And then we pretty much break down that resource and how to use it. We also like to have guests on to do extended episodes and even Q&A that's just for you about that resource. It's really exclusive and super private just for you.
So if you are like us and you like hanging out, you like chit-chatting about all things that are teaching, teacher life, and everything under that umbrella, join us for happy hour and we will see you there. Bye.
Bye.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. Friends, there's been a trend on the internet, on various social media channels, and it's like for a while, where people are sharing their unpopular opinions. And like, I don't know about you, Amanda. By the way, hi, Amanda.
Oh, hey.
But I've been, I don't know, kind of watching it being like, oh, okay, unpopular opinion for like a couple of months. And then there was something that happened over winter break that I started going, okay, this is actually really funny. Really funny. Some of the unpopular opinions that I would hear about like motherhood. A lot of the ones that come across my feeds are about raising kids and owning a house and that kind of a thing, or just like adulthood, basically. And some of the ones about education and teaching in general were extremely thought-provoking. And so we decided to bring some to you all, our wonderful Brave New Teaching community. That's what we're going to talk about today.
Well, that's because we are like the department meeting, the staff meeting that you wish you could actually have to talk some truth, because I think so many of these things are never said out loud. And Marie put her sticker out on Instagram to get some feedback from y'all. And I didn't even get a chance to do mine before. She was flooded
with
opinions. We have them. There are so many of them. So many, in fact, that this is only going to be a part one episode of many, because we already, just in our prep, are skimming through these, combing through these, and each one is getting us excited to talk for way more than you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things we've had to do is boil them down as well, because I mean, here's what can happen. Unpopular opinions. And I think this is the reason that I was kind of like, okay, whatever. And then they started getting funny for a while, is they're super snarky. They can be. And like, I have a good healthy dose of snark in my personality anyways, as we know, and you can start to kind of get down the negativity rabbit hole. But at the same time, I would say that looking at some of these listener unpopular opinions, and even just Amanda and I chit-chatting before we started recording, made me go, you know what? I think it's a good thing to examine as part of like a ever-evolving teaching practice, or just like, right? Like, keeping your thought processes always kind of moving and sharpening and honing and changing. And yeah, like there are a couple that I've gone full circle on that we're going to talk about today.
Well, and I think saying them out loud, you might actually realize they're less unpopular than you realize. Like there are so many unpopular opinions that I agreed with. I was like, this is no, this is just, this is right.
Yeah. No way. No way. That one makes sense. Yeah. No, absolutely. We are going to actually start by sharing a couple of ours before we cue the music. So Amanda, do you want to go first?
Okay, here we go. Vulnerable time. Actually, this, I feel like this has come up before in a lot of places, but my unpopular opinion is that we should not be reading entire novels aloud to our students. I say this as a coach. I say this as a teacher who worked in a building where this was the go-to lesson plan for multiple units at a time. And the immediate reaction I get from people when I say, why are you doing that? Is that, well, the kids won't read at home, so I have to read to them. So I'm not going to get into all of that right now, but I am very passionate about this topic. And there's more coming if you want to know more about that. I just want everyone in the world who's thinking, yeah, no, I'm not going to read a whole book to my kids out loud. Like, that's not the point of this. We're in company with each other.
Yeah, we're with you. I feel like, this though translates to other content areas, because like, I think about my friends who were social science teachers, if they had to sit and read aloud, like the literal read aloud, the primary source documents, the blurbs from the textbook, read all of the content to the kids. Like, yeah. And there are some teachers who feel beholden to doing that for the exact reasons that you were just laying out. Well, if they don't do it, the kids won't. I know this is not the time or the place for us to come up with the like other solutions, but like unpopular opinion, kids need to be accessing content on their own. Otherwise, they're not going to listen anyways, right? Is that kind of the other side of that one?
Yes, 100%. And then the other piece of it is the role of the educator.
Right. This is in no way a blanket like overall statement. There's definitely responsibilities we have for delivering content, but it's not only us.
It's not only us, and it's not only the book. I mean, we talk on this podcast all the time about decentering the novel, and the practice of reading, you know, I think gets, you know, we need to look at it on, under multiple lenses. There is time for reading for fun. There is time for in-class reading. There is time for read aloud. Absolutely. But reading an entire, like The Great Gatsby cover to cover because kids won't read it at home. Like, no, no, no bueno. That is my unpopular opinion. That is not a go-to for me whatsoever.
Super waste of instructional minutes. Like that like, stuff's precious.
Like if I was your department chair, we'd have a problem. But it seems to be very acceptable to a lot of people and kind of, you know, in all honesty, I think a lot of teachers just don't know what else to do. They're feeling
it's a practice that comes out of desperation. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so like, I don't judge it, but I just go,
no,
that's rough.
Also here to help,
Oh, 100%. We'll come back with more. And we'll even link some ideas and things in the show notes, because we've talked about this before in other episodes. Okay. So my unpopular opinion, and this is, I'm just going to drop the bomb and then we're going to go. Okay. My unpopular opinion is that no one class, no one secondary class where kids have multiple a day, no one elementary or like primary grade, no one class that a student is in is the most important of their educational career. That's it. Cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show. Okay, friends, I know that was kind of a weird way to cue the music just now, and it's okay. I'm going to elaborate a little bit, but no one class in any kid's day. Okay, let's take a high school student, right? In any student's day, no one course that they are in is the most important in their educational career or in their educational day, quite frankly. And this comes from me looking myself in the mirror and being like, get over yourself, like earlier on in my career. I was like, I teach English. This is where they learn to read and write and speak. And it's the most important thing that a child could possibly learn to do, blah, 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 blah. And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that every kid got everything. Does this sound familiar to all of us out there? We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make sure that every student learns all the things optimally. And when they don't, or if, I mean, not if they don't, when they don't, because they can't all learn all the things completely and totally, because they're all individual people and they're coming from different skill levels and different, like, every day is different for every person in their life, right? So we cannot put that kind of pressure on ourselves as educators to expect to reach every single child every single time and knock it out of the park every single day. It's just not going to happen. Beyond that, what kind of ego did I have to think that my class was more important than any other class? That's where I'm at. And that's absolutely self-reflective. Like,
well, I know where you're at, because I feel like that was kind of, I was there too. And I think what happens with English teachers as well, of course, we love what we do, first of all, but second of all, more so than other subjects, I feel like we feel inundated with the sheer number of skills that English isn't math. It's reading, writing, speaking, listening, research. And those things feel stacked almost against us sometimes in a way that we feel like we deserve more time. We come to, you know, our classrooms and we notice our kids are in so many different spaces, like you said, so many different skill levels, that it feels like we are the ones that have more to do and need more time. And whether or not that's true, I think to your point, getting more time or getting a bigger ego is not going to help kids learn more, because some kids just really, all kids need all the things all day long that they're getting. There's a reason that school is set up the way that it is.
And acknowledging that they are getting those things in other places, that I'm not the only one who can deliver that, even though I'm the one who is trained to deliver like direct writing instruction, you know, like, yes, that's absolutely my level of comfort. Like that's where my expertise is. Doesn't mean that they're not getting discussion skills in their math class. They're totally getting discussion practice in their math class. And so like, once I was able to step outside of my little room and outside of myself and go, A, I can take the pressure off, and B, I can like to eat a few bites of humble pie. It's a much more enjoyable experience being a part of a kid's day and not trying to be their whole reason. Does that make sense?
Well, I think it translates into so much of how we approach the class.
Yes.
I think once you can do that step back, I mean, we talk about so much in this podcast about the holistic big picture of everything. And that does not excuse like the course itself. The big picture of their lives and our class is we're a blip. I mean, I loved English class more than anything else. And I still can't remember a week's worth of lessons from start to finish.
Well, and you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to. They're not supposed to remember all the things that we do. They're not supposed to. It's supposed to build over time, right? Like it's supposed to build year by year. It's supposed to build week by week, day by day. It's supposed to build. And therefore, they should all be a slow burn and just a part of the day. Yes.
And that's for us to remember to take that pressure off.
Yes.
And have that holistic big picture approach. Like, don't beat yourself up. It's all going to be fine. And getting better over time is a beautiful thing for us to learn, for kids to learn. It's important.
And it comes and goes and it happens in waves, like my own remembering that, my own like realizations. I'm having that big time right now because as we record, I am a week out from having my wrist surgery. I'm not saying this correctly. I had my wrist surgery about a week ago. So poor Amanda has had to like type all the things and handwrite all the things. And I've been like, hey, Stenog, take this down, because there's a lot that I can't do. It's my dominant hand that has had surgery and I'm totally braced up. And I'm thinking, okay, less than a week from today, I'm going to be back in the classroom and responsible for a whole lot of things. Take some pressure off myself and realize that there are ways to get help. And it's also not the only thing that kids are doing during the day. It's not the only important thing. It's important. It's not the most important. It's not the least important. It's just not the only important thing, my class. So as I say this, my chest is getting tight, but I'm going to keep saying it until I actually believe it and feel better.
Very, very deep breaths are required for you.
In through the nose, out through the mouth. Our listeners,
it's the take that pressure off. I think that's so important to remember and be reminded of all the time.
Yes. Hey, let's start getting into some of our listener. Okay. So we've got like three kind of boiled down categories for unpopular opinions that we got from you all, our listeners on Instagram. And we're going to, like Amanda said, this is going to be part one of two parts, probably next month or so, sometime this spring. We'll come around with another round of them. But we were quite impressed and actually refreshed with quite a few of them. And Amanda has them written down. So what do you want to start with, my friend?
I do. So there was a direct, I want to actually kind of read this directly from this Instagram friend of ours. Her handle is E. Wipovich. And she wrote to us, it's silly to give a unit test that asks basic recall of characters and events instead of a unit exam or some sort that assesses skills. And we are with you.
Yes. Have we met? Hello.
Hi. Yeah. If you're giving unit tests on remembering who's who and what happened in what order, unpopular opinion over here too. No, thanks.
Well, and here's where I kind of take that. And once again, I try to always connect things to other content areas. Cause while the bulk of our listenership is secondary English language arts teachers or like kind of within that realm, we do have teachers that are in other areas of the education world. But like, I feel like any content is only as important as it is for being fuel for learning skills. I think in our content area, that's the easiest kind of swap to make, is that you could totally have some formative assessments that it makes sense making sure a student, for example, understands a character relationship and understands who this character is versus who this character is and what that symbol represents, especially in the grand scheme, in order to be able to develop their analysis skills, in order to like, right? So like those sorts of, do you understand this kind of assessment, I think belong along the way, and they have no place at the end of a unit.
No.
Because like who, at that point, pardon my language, who gives a shit? Like who cares? Who cares?
Well, we're beyond it. And we're kind of, you know, this really borders, I think all of these issues really border into our philosophical territory. Yeah. And, you know, that philosophy being, you know, existentially, what is the point of this class in the first place, right? Like, why are we here? You know, we're here for the critical thinking. I mean, that's what Marie and I are, you know, one of the things that formed our friendship was mm-hmm. this kind of insatiable, like, we can't stop talking about how much we care about challenging our kids in ways that are both fun, creative, and really actually hard, and really challenge kids to access critical thinking in from different angles and in different ways that they've done before.
Oh yeah.
And that's where the summative comes into play, is applying the skills of that unit, you know, to the essential question, to the themes of the text, to whatever the bigger picture, here we go again, of the whole unit really is.
Well, and that's where, I mean, promo time, that's where our free masterclass Down with the Reading Quiz comes into play. With those of you who've already gone through and watched, and you can watch it again if you want to, just head to the show notes. We've got a little thing, put in your email, you'll get it right in your inbox. This masterclass where we talk about different types of formative assessments, those formative assessments that we like to employ in our classes, not only formatively assess skills, but they inherently assess understanding. They inherently assess comprehension of content and recall, because if they can't recall this, that, and the other about a reading, about a lesson, about, right, like about straight up content, they're not going to be able to apply a skill to it. So that's kind of where we hit with the 1-2 punch. And if you have not had time, or if you're kind of like, wait, I need to look at that again, honestly, just take a look. It's there. It's free. We believe in it. We want you to see what we mean. Our Down with the Reading Quiz has helped hundreds and hundreds of teachers in kind of making that shift of like, I can be doing way less and going way deeper with both content and skills.
And right, we're not reinventing any wheels here.
Nope.
Just charging on forward with things that are just good practice and simplified.
Absolutely.
To it.
Okay, so what's our next one?
Wipovich, we are with
yes.
you unpopularly, or maybe increasingly more popularly.
I think so.
So we're here to transition people into that mindset. So this is going to sound like a total flip, but you're also going to see that it's, these are all connected. But we also saw quite a few comments, not just any one person, but a lot of you had things to say about cell phones. And a lot of you who are like, screw it. I don't want a phone jail. I don't want a this. I don't want a that. I don't want this rule, that rule. It's time to just embrace reality and learn to live with cell phones because they're just part of what's real right now.
Yeah.
Unpopular opinion. Are you with it, Marie, or are you not with it?
This is where I've come full circle. When I first started as a teacher, I was like, well, I mean, it was like 2007, 2006. And cell phones, kids had them. We still had flip phones, right? But they were there and texting was a thing. And like cell phones were everywhere. Not every kid had a smartphone necessarily. So it wasn't as much of an issue, but it was like my school had a whole policy where you see a phone, you take it, you put it in a bag and you send it up to the office and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And like, I got kind of funny looks from like administration at the time, which none of those administrators are still with us. I just realized, I've just been teaching there for so long. Like, I was like, I'm not going to do that. Do I have to do, like, are you telling me to get tenure? I have to do that. And it was like, well, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Because even at 22, 23 years old, the idea of starving kids from something that is a technological piece of their life, that is a life tool, right? Like I saw that I had my phone on me all the time. Why wouldn't kids have their phones on them all the time? What just didn't make sense to me. It made more sense to me to train them in how to be responsible with their technology, in how to have it on them and not be on it the whole time, so that when they have a job, they lose their job for texting all day long, right? Like those were the things that just made sense to me. Cut to a few years ago, there are a couple of YouTube videos that I made that went absolutely viral because I had it with my freshmen and their MF phones. Like I was dunsky. And so I got the phone pockets and it wasn't for all the time. Like, or I took the shoe hanger. Yeah. I wasn't about to go and spend money on the phone pockets. That was when they were starting to come out, the like numbered phone pocket chart things. And when we would have an assessment, when we would have a discussion where I actually needed their attention, right? When I needed moments of unbridled focus and maturity as much as I could get out of my sweet little ninth graders, who are my 12th graders now, sweet little babies. I said, okay, let's put them up. Right? Like we would put them up in the front, their phones. And I had a couple of videos about kind of figuring that out that were all over the place. I've gone full circle. I took the phone chart down when we came back from COVID. I have got a couple other little strategies because I'm back to, you know what, if they can't be responsible with it, I want them to learn those lessons in the soft landing place of my classroom and not in the real world. I want them to learn when it is and is not appropriate to be taking a video of somebody. I want them to learn and I want them to have to manage their own anxiety around their phone. Does that like,
yeah,
I had a couple kids when I would have them put their phones in the phone chart that would have an actual anxious meltdown and like written into a 504, written into official documentation where like little kiddo couldn't have their phone be that far away from them because of reasons. And then I had to explain it to the rest of my class why little kiddo got to have their phone, but all the rest of you don't, right? Like it was just, it started to become this headache of like, I don't want to deal with that crap. So I do other things now. And we definitely still have times where I'm just explicit about it's appropriate to have your phone out now. It is inappropriate to have your phone out now, you know, like boom. That's when we know. And once again, granted, I do teach 11th and 12th graders. So like, I know that there's definitely an age difference that happens with different sorts of policies, but that's kind of like where I've come to is keep your phone on you. God forbid the worst happens. I want them to have access to communication. Like, let's just be realistic about the world we live in. We're in a classroom. Classrooms can be dangerous. So yeah.
On that light note,
it is what it is, man.
It is what it is. I mean, I don't really have much to add to your story other than
a tirade. You could call it a tirade. That's appropriate.
No, I think it's thoughtful reflection. I mean, really, I do, Marie. And I think that's part of why I love you because I just think you're so honest with your process. So where I left things in my last semester, I had the shoe hanger as well. And I used it as a charging station. Like that's kind of where like my policy went back and forth for a few years. I did pocket points for like a hot minute.
Yeah. I liked it. It was okay. It was just, I have never been good at keeping up with something like that past 2 days.
Right. Well, yeah. Right. The prizes and then like it kind of just stayed in my room as a charging station and kids would use it to charge their phones. It was also kind of nice to have a place for the students that needed that, like kind of that push, like, okay, mm-hmm. I've told everyone that this is not a time to use your phone. You still have your phone out. You know, at this point, I kind of want to give you some choices. Do you want to put it on the charging station and just let it charge so it's not an issue? Or do you want to keep having confrontations with me?
Right. What's our solution like, here? Yeah,
right. Totally. Like you can either like do yourself a favor and, you know, like self-advocate, go put it somewhere else. Like it's safe over here. It's fine. Or do you want me to keep coming over here, reminding you? And then it just becomes like any other negative behavior, right? Like this is what I use to call home about or talk to the office or talk to a case manager or whatever. Like I'm identifying what the problem is, and a cell phone can be a problem the same as talking to a friend can be a problem, and passing notes used to be a problem. And I think it says a lot about our classroom environments and how and why we should always be rethinking and adjusting our policies, procedures, the physical layout, and even just like, honestly, I don't know if this is another unpopular opinion, but sometimes excessive cell phone use in a class means your pacing is off. You're probably going a little too slow. If kids are on their phones, like excessively not paying attention, sometimes that's an indicator that you could probably pick the pace up and keep things rolling. So they're like, oh my God, like what's going on? Like I'm not paying attention. Some kids are perfectly fine never paying attention regardless of your pacing.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have a good half a dozen on any given day in any class of kiddos who are just checked out. And that is partially I've seen that uptick past or post quarantine, like the definitely stamina of focus is just so there's that. But like at the same time, to Amanda's point, part of it is also me letting them have too long of transition time. It's me not being sharpened. And like that's basically indirect feed. Well, it's pretty direct, but it's feedback that I'm getting that there are some things that I need to adjust as a teacher because and then I just have a couple of kids who it's like, okay, buddy, I've had to tell you to put your phone screen side down on your table 5 times. I've tallied it on the board just for myself. Like, what's happening? Like what you were saying, like, how are we going to solve this? Is it going in your backpack? Where do you need me to hold it for you? Put it on my desk where you can see it. What's our solution here? Or do you need to learn from outside where I then close the door? Because you're going to get about as much of the content out there as you're getting in here.
And remember, like so much of what I'm picturing Marie actually doing this with kids right now as I'm listening to her. And I think the biggest thing we need to remember too, I mean, not the biggest, but one other big thing we need to remember is that how we handle this disruption, we handle cell phones is going to be reflective of the relationship we've built with kids. It's going to be something that colors that relationship with kids. It's going to be something that we're going to have to do all the time and will either extinguish our energy or just be part of how we've already decided to handle it. So I think number one, like decide how you want to handle it in a way that you're comfortable, not like triggered, you know, like notice ahead of time so that you're not reacting to this in the moment, because that is going to kill your energy, ruin your day, and it's going to feel like a constant uphill battle rather than something that you're trying to work into managing a culture around.
It's routine. It goes back to routine.
Punishing, right? A behavior.
Yes. That's, it goes back to that episode we talked about routines. Sorry, I totally talked over you.
You're right.
I'm kind of a butt like that. But it goes back. I'm just reminding myself, or I'm reminded of you talking about routines and how routines and pacing are the best kind of classroom management you can have. when it comes to behavior, because if students are engaged because they know what to expect, they're engaged because the pacing is appropriate, right? Like if all of these things are in place, and because you as the instructor talk about big picture, talk about the things that we teach in curriculum rehab, if you know the long game and you know where you're going and you yourself are not feeling like you're grasping for like footing, it's easier to do all of the things we're talking about. It's easier to build in the routines. It's easier, like if you know what your curriculum game plan is from the get-go, or you're building that in, you're going to have a much easier time managing those routines, creating those routines, and getting kids to buy into those things. All of that. Yes, yes, yes. And then you just try stuff out. Like right now, I've got these little like mini wood crates that I got at Walmart a few years ago or something that I have on each of my students. Like I have my kids in tables. And when it's time for phones to be like 100% away, like done, they have the option. It's either in their backpack zipped, or like their bag zipped up, closed, done, or it's face down in the crate so that everybody's phones are there together. Everybody's on silent and it's all face down in the crate. They have eyes on it. It's where they can see it. But if that's a problem, it's in their bag. And if we're having like a discussion on a sensitive topic, I need them to be able to know that they're able to speak in a safe place with only the community environment that we have built within the classroom present, and not a video and not a voice recording. Yeah.
We didn't even get into that, but
I know.
I mean, the safety around the cell phone issue, and just like you talked about earlier too, like students need to also learn appropriate behavior for themselves.
Yes.
Like they need to reckon with the addiction of social media, just like I think adults do, but they need a lot more help in recognizing it and then finding these strategies and solutions.
It's the flat out modeling, like any other, like honestly, it's like potty training. You and I have both done that with our kids. It's the constant recognition of
I've got to go.
It's the, well, maybe not like flat out modeling. Okay. Maybe this was a weird one to connect.
Well,
but it's like any skill kids are learning, or just human beings are learning. It's the recognition. It's the reinforcement. It's the, yes, absolutely. I think it's time to move on to our last unpopular opinion.
This is a doozy. I think this one on the surface does sound really yikes, but I think once we unpack it, we're going to have some other thoughts about it.
So absolutely.
This unpopular opinion is,
we had a few and she's going to read, are you just going to read one of them?
I'm going to read the one that I think was really like succinctly like stated.
Poignant.
Yeah. Because there's a couple others that are like in the same vein. Relationships are not everything, period. They can help, but they aren't magic, nor can they replace actual good teaching and pedagogy practices.
Mm-hmm.
Sister, yes. Unpopular, yes. I've spoken about this quite a bit on my Instagram stories at the start of the school year. So like the back to school season, this is when the relationship building conversation really comes, I think, to a head for a lot of people.
Sure.
And I couldn't agree more. Like establishing relationships with students is critical, but what that actually looks like, I think, has been interpreted in a lot of very different ways across admin, teachers, grade levels, subject areas. I mean, that's where things get a little murky, is defining what that actually looks like.
I would even say the relationship is only as strong as the routine and the boundary.
Yeah.
Like relationships, the strongest relationships are formed on trust. And trust is formed by repeated positive experiences and interactions, right? I mean, I'm no psychoanalyst or therapist here, but like, that's what I've learned. And so you can have a really good bond and be, you know, quote unquote, close to a kid. But if a child does not know what to expect from you and from your classroom, and I'm talking specifically to like a classroom educator, if a kid doesn't know what to expect and trust that they can expect that experience 99% of the time, that relationship is built on fluff. Like it's built on nothing. There is no true strength there. Yeah. I can keep going, but I'm going to let you talk because
I think I'm there. Trust. And this, I think, is that second half of this particular person's statement is, it's important, but it doesn't replace good teaching or pedagogy, right? Like when we talk about good teaching and pedagogy, what Maria is underscoring, I think, is predictable routine, right? It's going to be strategies and lessons that are purposeful and meaningful. Consistency in expectations of rigor, right? Like I can distinctly remember my first couple of years of teaching, the thing, and I still hear this when I coach some of my teachers, is, well, they didn't finish it in time, so I gave them an extra day. I gave them 3 extra days. I pushed the deadline. I, instead of reading the book to them, just the first chapter, I read the whole book out loud to them, right? It's like this, like, taking down and taking away responsibility from students was what I thought was supporting them and building like an I got your back kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
I'll do it for you. Yes.
In fact, I was doing it for them and I was not clear on skills, priorities, all of those other things. So I think, you know, this idea of you can be a strict teacher, you can have firm boundaries, you can have high academic expectations and still have positive, meaningful, important relationships with your kids.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think it's a yes and
goals.
Like in my experience, the students with whom I can really tell you flat out, I know I have made a difference in their life. I did not give things away. Like they're later on in my career when I figured out how to both uphold my own boundaries and my own policies and be consistent with all of that good stuff and have a good relationship with kids. Like that's when I started to see for myself my own efficacy and like my own impact. Was when I like, don't get us wrong, to each their own. We all have different styles of these sorts. So we're not saying you have to do it the way we do it. No. We're just saying, unpopular opinion, those relationships are only as good as they are strong. And that strength comes from trust and boundaries and expectations. And yeah.
I think one of the best, like, succinct examples I can remember for myself was back in the day when kids would turn in essays, they had to print them.
Oh yeah. With a whole packet. Yeah. And like, and each version, each draft would have my initials with the date. Yeah.
Yes. And I can remember, and I wish I could remember the person I learned this from to give her credit, but I had said to her, I said, well, this student told me that their paper was going to be late because they don't have a printer at home. And I feel really bad that they don't have the same resources that these other kids have. And she's like, I'm stopping you in your tracks. Your job is to empower that student, not to kind of lax off on the expectations, because you can still expect that something is due on the same day and support that student in getting there, right? So what we ended up doing was, for those kids, I would stay after school the day before and take anyone who wanted to go with me to the library to print the paper in the library the day before it's due. And mm-hmm. does it suck that, you know, maybe somebody else had an extra 3 hours to finish their paper? I mean, yeah, but let's be honest. If you're done, you're done, right? Like if you're done, you're done. You can print it. So like little things like that, I was learning in so many words that my job was to support kids on the front end with strategies, coping, and ideas to empower them, not to give them more wiggle room, because wiggle room doesn't help kids who struggle. Wiggle room makes them more wiggly.
Well, really broadly, yes. I mean, and once again, obviously there's always like case by case caveats here. So hopefully those of you who are listening have been listening for a minute. If you're brand new listeners, listen back to a few episodes and know that we know every child is different and we know that every case is different, but it's like almost on a broader policy of like, if one kid gets wiggle room, then all of them should have the grace for wiggle room when they need it. And it's that, like, it's that subjective when they need it that is something that you were learning, right? It's the,
yes. And I was also learning like the boundary, right? Of like, right. Of the, when I wiggle, I'm not giving them that consistency. They're learning that I'm going to set a deadline or I'm going to set a rule. Yes. I'm going to set a boundary, but when they push it, I will bend. And so learning, like you said, there are moments, times, and it's in circumstances where flexibility is critical, but on the whole, right? I needed to find out.
We like, have established norms. Yes.
Yes. How to be someone with fair, thoughtful expectations that were reinforced in a way that taught kids how to rely on me as a structure in their life.
Yeah.
And that is an unpopular opinion. I think people hear that, they go, but how that could kid you needed more do time. That.
Yes. I know. I know. And that's something you can go around and around and around. And again, it's case by case. It has to be case by case because every person is different.
But it also needs to be thought through like in the process, right?
Well,
like,
yes.
Right. Like also building in like, okay, so I think what we need to do is then also build in more time on the front end, or the next time I assign this, it's going to be a 6-day assignment rather than a 4, right? Yep. So it's also about the evolution and moving forward and not constantly moving back. Cause that's
it's taking that feedback. Yes.
Our routines, right. Is like, we need to keep going. And if kids keep thinking that if they get to any of those boundaries, right. And they know that you're going to fall backwards somehow, whatever that might be, whether it's a deadline or a book or whatever, then you are not providing the stability and the predictability and consistency that you're talking about before. That's why I desperately send my children to daycare, is I can't do that at home. And I need Miss Tia to be the one to do that, for crying out loud. I need her to do that. It's the same for high schoolers. It's the same for middle schoolers. They need that from us, and whatever that looks like, right?
Right.
Like having that is critical. And I think that's really why we believe so strongly in curriculum rehab, what we do, you know, just from a unit perspective, right? Like, we're going to guide this unit through an essential question. It's got frames, but it's also got flexibility. We have a firm goal in mind, but how we get there, lots of different ways to get there, lots of different avenues to adjust along the way. But the kids know where we're headed. The kids trust the assessment at the end is not going to be a recall of character.
It's not going to be a big surprise. Yes. It's not going to be an anxiety inducing event. It's going to be something they've known about all along. Yes, absolutely. It all intersects and like has... it just echoes over and over again. This idea of predictability, this idea of routine, this idea of knowing where you're going so that you can make your way there.
And if you're flailing right now, you're like, oh my gosh, I have none of that.
First of all, you're not alone. I have all of that and I'm still kind of flaily, but that's just because this year is unlike any other. So that's okay.
It's okay. It's okay. That's what we're here to say.
Yeah.
It's okay. And we have resources for you. I mean, we're going to link specific episodes that are related to the things that we're talking about. Marie talked about Down with the Reading Quiz. If you're at a stage where you're ready to check out curriculum rehab, we'd love to have you as a student. Wherever you are in your journey on all of these things, we definitely want to hear from you more on social media. We'd love to hear from you in any way that you want to talk to us. I mean, let's talk.
For sure. And friends, we are really excited to bring you some more unpopular opinions in the coming months. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. We have a ton of new content coming to you in this wonderful new year we have of 2022. So much promise. Please live up to it, 2022, she says to herself with a deep breath. And yeah, we're looking forward to one of the goals that we have is to interact more through social media with our with all of you, our listeners, and our Brave New Teaching community. So if you're not already following us on Instagram, make sure you head on over. We're just at Brave New Teaching, and we're excited to do some more connecting and some more communicating and all of that good stuff.
Thanks for joining us. And if we didn't get to your unpopular opinion, my goodness, like you were on the list. We're going to bring you another
coming. Absolutely. Friends, we hope that the new year is treating you well, and we cannot wait to talk to you again soon. Thank you so much. We will see you next time. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.